Dave. This week we have a special guest from Hawaii. We have Shay.
Hello.
And let's get it rolling.
All right, on to the news. There's been a lot of stuff breaking just over the past couple days. I know we've taken a few weeks off, so sorry about that, anyone who actually listens to us. Welcome. All right, first news story. This is going all over the web, so this may be old news by the time this gets up tomorrow night. But apparently there was a screening of Clerks 2 up in New York, and Joel Siegel was so incensed that 40 minutes out, he made a scene. He walked out, and he made a scene and said, well, time to go. And then he said, I've never walked out of a movie in 30 effing years, which it was interesting. If you go to – we'll link to it on the site under the links. But Kevin Smith came back and said, you know what? I don't care that you left the movie. It's not for everybody. I get that. But he had a problem with the unprofessionalism of him walking out. And usually stuff gets let go from there. One guy, you know, pisses another guy off. He retorts back and it gets over with. Well, Kevin Smith went on the Opie and Anthony show to talk about his movie and stuff, and the Joel Siegel thing came up, and they ended up getting Joel Siegel on the phone, and they went back and forth and were just, it was very interesting. Like, it was great. Essentially, Kevin Smith's like, look, I get it, you don't like the movie, but just don't make a scene. It's unprofessional. You get paid to watch movies for free and talk about them. Now, who wouldn't give their left whatever to have that job? And Joel just kind of missed that whole thing. And finally, at the end, he's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess I won't do that again. I promise you that much.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. It was interesting. Another thing coming up, in a future episode, probably about 2 or 3 weeks down, we're going to be looking at the differences between HD DVD and Blu-ray DVD, just with a high-definition war and everything. None of us have gone high-def yet that I know of, but that kind of makes us a special audience because we're prospectively looking at HD. So over at Major Nelson, he works for Microsoft, mostly on Xbox stuff. He has a podcast episode up where he goes and talks to the guys in the Microsoft labs who made the video codec for HD DVD. And they talk about the differences between that and Blu-ray, and it's very interesting. If I can find something for Sony, I'll put it up too, just because I want to be as fair and balanced to quote other networks and stuff. But I do want to be fair because this could be a niche market or it could be what takes off. And right. It's a very interesting story. So, actually, Barry, do you want to take the next story?
Sure. Well, as I'm sure most of you know by now, Heath Ledger has recently been offered the role as the Joker. Not cast as the Joker, but they put the offer on the table for the following Batman sequel that Chris Nolan is directing along with Christian Bale, returning as the Dark Knight. I don't know how I feel about this because you know, I'll tell you, I really enjoyed his performance in The Brothers Grimm. I thought there was some real inventiveness and some real ingenuity there that I haven't seen in any of other films like Knight's Tale or, you know, all the other Pretty Boy movies he's done. And same with Brad Pitt, though. You know, prior to 12 Monkeys, I thought, okay, he's a pretty boy with long hair who does these romantic epics. But after 12 Monkeys, it's like, wow, he's got a lot of versatility. And, you know, now I remember when Fight Club came out and I thought, you know, Pitt can really do a lot more than we gave him credit for. So perhaps with Ledger as the Joker, this, you know, this could either be, you know, potential miscasting or, more to the point, this could be a real chance to see a side of him we've never seen before.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because with Chris Nolan directing it, I mean, no one knew what to expect because the guy had come off doing Insomnia
right.
And Memento pretty much. And I think he garnered a lot of fan respect and a lot of cred.
Yeah.
So I think people are going to be a lot more willing to trust him with making this choice.
Yeah.
It's not the first choice I would have made. I mean,
right.
We talked about that last episode.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. It's not an obvious choice, but, you know, neither was Michael Keaton, and that was a, you know, people were picketing Warner Brothers for that for months, so.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Go ahead.
All right, and Alex asked me to bring up this little bit of information. A cartoon from my high school childhood, whatever, high school, good enough. The great cartoon Animaniacs is being released next Tuesday on the 25th.
Wow.
Did it get off the air or something?
It got taken off the air after about 4 or 5 years, yeah. I want to say. So they're releasing this. They're releasing Pinky and the Brain later this year.
Yes.
So all I'm asking for is please, Warner Brothers, bring us Freakazoid 2.
Yeah, absolutely. Pinky and the Brain, though. I mean, I think that's one of the most brilliantly written cartoon shows. It's up there with anything that Tex Avery did, any of the Warner Brothers stuff. You like Pinky and the Brain, right?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a sidetrack. But I have to say, the first time they said what Bryce Dallas Howard was last night in the movie, in the lake, I wanted to yell, no!
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, but I was so tempted.
Yeah, and I thought it's a very you know, because it's so closely associated with that cartoon show, you figured Shyamalan would have changed it for that reason.
Yeah, but it's Shyamalan.
Yeah, he does whatever the heck he wants. So, yeah, yes. Exactly.
He's a good actor. A great actor.
Yeah.
You liked him in it?
Yeah, he played a great role. I like when he, like, cried and all that. That's touching.
He's a cool, very versatile actor. Sure.
Yes. Okay, this next bit, like, we're going to say it and probably move on from there because I'm, like, the only video game guy here tonight.
Sorry.
But the popular Xbox game, Xbox 360 game, between fighting and extreme beach volleyball, they brought forth the theory of jiggle physics.
Oh, great.
There's a movie coming out, and IGN has an interview with Jeremy Bolt, who's one of the producers, and I saw one quote because I had to bring up the volleyball. There's a 3-minute volleyball sequence in it. For a 13-year-old boy, it's going to traumatize a whole generation. Yeah, it's all about TNA, pretty much. And
geeks, get ready to fasten those pause buttons.
Now, just to give everyone an idea who's in this, Devin Aoki, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it or not, from Sin City,
yep,
is going to be in it.
You're right.
She played Miho. Jamie Presley from My Name is Earl is going to be in this. And the grand star, Kevin Nash, you know, the whatever NWO wrestler man.
For those of you geeks who are tired of watching Into the Blue over and over again, this is your movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Wow. Wow. All right. Next bit of news is not actually about a famous actor. If you guys saw Hellboy, the guy who did the motion capture work for Abe Sapien is rumored to be doing the motion capture work for Silver Surfer in Fantastic Four 2.
Interesting.
Wow.
So hopefully that'll be pretty cool. I mean, they don't say who's going to be in it, but all I know is it's not Vin Diesel. This is kind of like a comic book / like video game segment, so sorry about that ahead of time. But, wow, moving right along. The last Hulk movie bombed. I loved it. I know Barry liked it.
I like the real Hulk movie instead of the animated.
So you like the series, right?
Yeah, I like the series a lot better than the animated because no Hulk can jump from rock to rock or just swing tanks.
Well, sure he can. He's the Hulk.
but you like the original series.
You're a fan of the big Bill Bixby show.
David Banner. And
Yeah. It's, you know, you're not alone. A lot of people did not like the movies so, as much as the series. So.
But I love, who was that lady who was in it?
Jennifer Connelly?
Yeah.
Good man.
Thank you.
Geeks
unite. Yes.
Yes. Okay. A few weeks ago, Avi Arad came out and said that they're essentially rebooting the whole franchise. Like,
wow,
they're going to pretend the first movie didn't even happen. The movie's going to be called The Incredible Hulk, and a director has been announced. And I'm going to butcher his name, but oh well. His name is Louis Leterrier, I'm guessing.
That's how I would have pronounced it.
Okay,
so, yeah.
The director of the critically acclaimed Transporter 2 will be taking the helm for the next movie.
Oh, boy.
That's promising.
Transporter 2?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no.
No? Oh, no, it was no good?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic.
Okay.
I need to warn people before we start recording.
The first Transporter was awesome.
Yes.
The sequel wasn't any good. I haven't seen either of these movies.
Oh, yeah. You're
I've just seen the trailer, and I thought they looked kind of cool. Really?
Maybe you're taking the Transporter and the Rundown home with you tonight.
Yeah, and I'm completely in the dark. Obviously, completely. This is a bad thing? You don't think?
Oh, no. I think it's going to be a horrible choice. Well, I can't say that, but based off the movie and the reviews it got, it doesn't bode well. Now, granted, you had Tim Story, who did Barbershop before he did Fantastic Four.
Right.
So you're not sure if you're heading down that road or where you're going. If it's just a guy who hasn't had a good concept to work with yet or not. So.
Wasn't there a lot of CGI, though, in Transporter 2? Or?
I don't know if it was mostly just an action flick. Just
crap
blown up and kung fu with Jason Statham. And
it's a shame that they're not getting a real director like Ang Lee to take on a really interesting character.
Yeah. Speaking of directors not taking on interesting characters, with Clerks 2 coming out, Kevin Smith makes our list twice this week. Superhero hype went up, got a hold of him while he was promoting Clerks 2, and they asked him if he wants to do Green Hornet. And this is what I love about the guy. He's honest. He's like, look, y'all don't get it yet. I can't do action. I know this. I understand this. No, for the good of the movie, I'm not going to do this.
That's interesting, and that's a shame because I was looking forward to that. I mean, because he's been talking about this for years. Didn't he write a screenplay? Or?
He did write a screenplay at one point. He wrote quite a few of the comics. That's why he had the cameo in Daredevil as well, is because he wrote and that he wrote quite a few series in that.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And a movie of his I really wanted to see made. He was talking about doing Fletch for a long time. Remember that?
He was going to do Fletch Lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jason, he was going to get Jason Lee to play Fletch.
That would have been really interesting. I wonder if they could even do it now. Now that Jason Lee all of a sudden has all this cred with.
I'm wondering if they might be able to push it through.
That'd be nice.
It'd be interesting to hear if they're still talking about it. If they're like, yeah, that was an idea at one point, and. Yeah, never mind.
Because I like Kevin Smith's, I obviously love his view of Skew Universe, but I'd like to see him go beyond it. I would like to see him take on something completely and utterly different outside of his understanding.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be very interesting. Well, I think he could do slapstick comedy so well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's more than just bathroom humor. I mean, if you've watched his movies, yes, that's definitely in there, but he's also a very intelligent writer, too, so
yeah,
it'd be interesting.
Yeah, like he's saying slapstick. I mean, even like with Jay and Silent Bob, he has a good feel for like almost kind of silent kind of humor. You get a sense that in his hands, like even a Police Academy sequel would be interesting to watch.
It'd be at least interesting, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So our next piece of news is strictly a public service announcement for any parents listening to this show. I was in Hollywood Video, probably a week or so ago, and I saw this movie. It's called Pirates. I'm like, huh. It's Shay's laughing. I was like, oh, look, it's a Pirates of the Caribbean ripoff. So I hit IGN.com, and turns out, yeah, not so much for all you parents out there. If your kids come up, you go, Mommy, Mommy, it's a Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Yeah, don't rent it. It's the first adult movie to ever be run through the MPAA and been edited down to an R rating for wide release.
Kids at home, only professional do it. Kids don't do it at home.
That's right. Porn is not for children.
No, not for the kiddies.
It's kryptonite.
Thank you for keeping it in the geek realm, Shay.
Yes,
I appreciate that.
Just bringing it back home. It's all
yes.
Good.
So, like, how much shorter is this movie now?
I have no idea.
Are we talking, like, even, like, at, like, 60-minute mark?
Well, it's funny because the people who are in it are kind of complaining because they're saying...
My performance, the integrity is gone.
Exactly. Well, no, what they're saying is, like, you have movies like Original Sin and stuff like that, and they're like, they got away with so much more stuff than we did in this cut. Well... It's the fact that they know what they're doing is real.
Yeah.
Anything you see, it's really happening. There's no faking. Well, okay, let's move on.
I think this brings up an interesting point because something like Hostel, I haven't.
That was the other thing was that they said that like in the first 10 minutes you see more skin than you see in this entire movie.
That's the thing. Well, not even so much that. I was just thinking like, if someone – I haven't seen Hostel, granted – but from what I understand, it's torture porn for the masses. I mean, what if, what is the distinct difference between something like Hostel, which is fictionalized, but at the same time it's graphic torture, and a stage snuff film, or an actual snuff film, many of which are proven not to be authentic.
Kind of like Cannibal Holocaust or something.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Except
where they actually kill the animals, but yeah.
Because I got a question this because I was having a conversation about this the other day. There's a film that came out in 1990 called Wild Orchid with Mickey Rourke. Again, Mickey Rourke, our Sin City connection.
Yeah.
It's a movie that was given an R rating, but now it's the MPAA is going back looking at it because it turns out the sex scenes in the movie were not simulated.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that, the last one.
Yeah.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, so that's the question, like, is the question the graphic content or is authenticity a question? Particularly, like, with, something like Original Sin is interesting because the sex scenes in that movie are so graphic, I would even question whether they were simulated or not. I almost said stimulated, but I wanted to say simulated or not.
Well, simulated, stimulated.
Yeah.
Okay, so, we're just going down the wrong
path. Yeah, completely downhill. Yeah, even Shay didn't sing to that one.
I never saw the movie, period.
You're a good man, Shay. Your halo is showing.
Thank you. It should be on eBay.
All right, so parents, don't see Pirates.
Yeah, don't let the kids rent that. I mean, like, some parents, they don't even look at the ratings, so title-specific, don't get Pirates, or Pirates 2, which they're apparently making.
Oh.
Yes.
Moving on.
Yeah, we're almost through the news, folks. In other video game news, there's a game coming out on the Xbox 360 called Dead Rising. The whole point of it is you're a reporter stuck in a shopping mall when zombies have taken over the Earth.
Great premise. Cool.
So you get to run around killing zombies. With whatever you can get your hands on.
Yeah.
I've seen a demo where someone took a planter, like, a big terracotta planter, and, like, bashed it over a zombie's head. There's another spot where he grabs an overstuffed teddy bear and tries to beat off the zombies. It's very humorously done, tongue-in-cheek.
That sounds great.
I have a question for you. What's I saw like PlayStation 3 that's coming out and Xbox 360. Which one has better graphics?
Wow, we're getting into the geeky stuff now.
Wow, man. You guys are on your own. I'll just sit here and watch this.
From what I've seen, the 360 is the only one thing that has anything out on the market right now, obviously. The PlayStation comes out in November. Looking at the specs, they're going to be about the same. As far as the actual disc content, since the PS3 is going to have the Blu-ray, they're going to be able to fit more onto a disc. So you may end up seeing the Xbox 360 have multi-disc games. But as far as actual processing power, they're going to be about on the same level. So, and we'll be getting into that bit more as well.
Later on the show.
Or a future episode, whichever. Yeah. Getting back to Dead Rising, though, in Germany, there are rumors going around that it's been banned and because of the violent content. Hmm. So, again, Major Nelson hitting the list twice, as well as Kevin Smith. He found a guy in Germany who actually explained the situation. And we'll put the link up so you can read it in more detail. But apparently it hasn't been officially banned in Germany. Yeah, it hasn't been officially banned. It's been unrated. Which, what that means is Microsoft will not allow anything to be published for the 360 that's been unrated. Hmm. What that also means, it's not an actual ban, because all that this means is that they can't market it at all. They can't even have kiosks or posters or anything in the stores.
Wow.
But they can sell them, quote-unquote, under the counter to adults. Hmm. So the reason why they didn't rate it is because they're saying at some point they may ban it because of the violent content.
What do you think? By your assessment, you've played a lot of games that, you know, are a bit on the R-rated side. I mean, is it worth all this controversy?
I kind of doubt it. It's interesting because Europe and the rest of the world is kind of backwards from the U.S. In the U.S., we're very sensitive to sexual content.
Right.
You know, hence the R rating for pirates. They're like, you know, we know what y'all are doing. This is what you're getting. You know, deal with it.
Right.
It's the same thing in Europe, and well, specifically in Europe with violence. When the Xbox 360 first came out, they had an ad that was beautiful. They must have taken it off an episode of Spaced or something, because they have all these, everyone is walking around in a mall, and suddenly someone like points a finger gun, like they make a gun out of their finger and point it at someone. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the mall starts pointing fingers at each other. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it turns into a giant bang, 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 I killed you thing. Like, and they're playing Hold That Tiger over the music. It's awesome.
Wow.
But it got banned.
Huh.
So.
And yet they have billboards with nudity and mm-hmm. commercials with nudity, and
it's kind of like I'm kind of like, you know, don't be throwing stones, because just because we find one thing more sensitive,
sure,
they find something else more sensitive.
So
it's a cultural thing. So you'll be able to get it in Germany, but right now at the same time, a lot of the Xbox 360 discs are not region encoded, so they can just import it from the UK or somewhere else and buy it that way.
Man,
but it's just kind of interesting.
That is. It's just like movies. I mean, like I was just thinking, Battle Royale available everywhere on the planet except for the United States of America.
Yeah. Most of you will remember our interview with the guys over at FirstShowing.net that Barry and I did.
Yep.
Well, Alex and Josh ended up heading out to Comic-Con this year, which, with all the stuff they're doing, I kind of wanted to see if we can make it next year or something.
No kidding.
Try to make that.
Lucky buggers.
Yeah, we'll link to it. We'll make it one of the first links. They're actually doing like live blogging as they're going through things. They got to see the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trailer like 10 minutes before it actually hit the internet, which we will link to. It's pretty fun. It looks like it's going to be pretty good. They've also got coverage regarding a Stargate trilogy, which I didn't know they were going to make a trilogy of movies, so I don't know who they'd even do for the cast.
No kidding.
It's interesting, but they're also got to see some sneak peeks at Ant Bully, Monster House, the 3D version, Happy Feet, and then that's what they've had before we went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And this evening they're going to be looking at Saw 3, and then they're apparently Guillermo del Toro is going to be at least talking about Pan's Labyrinth.
Interesting.
Which should be pretty good. And Alex also got to see a movie called Renaissance, which is a French motion capture animated film, and he said
I've heard it's gorgeous.
Good.
I've not seen the trailer yet. Someone told me, and you know, I wish Alex was here to beat me over the head by saying this, but I hear it's the movie that Sin City tried to be.
Ouch.
Yeah, so so Alex, I'm feeling it. I'm sure next week I'll feel it really, but
And as Alex posted on our boards, there's an Alex from First Showing, and there's a Screen Geeks Alex.
There's a Screen Geeks Alex who is like Mr. Comic Book Adaptation, and he's a total Sin City buff. So Alex, I'm sorry, but apparently this is better than your movie. So
yeah, and all of this stuff, they have a central Comic-Con like live blogging spot, so we're going to link to that page. And check it out. They're checking out a lot of stuff, and they're getting a lot of news, which is really cool.
You guys are so lucky. Wish we were there.
Yeah, hopefully. Maybe next year. I don't know. We'll have to see if we can swing it.
Definitely.
So we're going to go ahead and save right now, and we'll be back to talk about our main topic. All right, welcome back to Screen Geeks. We're going to be covering two topics today. We will be talking about Lady in the Water, and we're going to be going very much into spoiler territory. So once we get to it, we'll give you a warning. You may want to skip ahead. We'll figure out. You'll probably want to skip to the end after that. But what we're going to start off talking about is about a week or so ago, a federal judge found against a company called CleanFlix. Now, what CleanFlix does is they purchase copies of a given DVD, and they edit it for content. I like to call it sanitizing because they take out any nudity, they take out any language, they take out any graphic on-screen violence, anything like that, it's gone. And if you look at their inventory, I guess you can call it that, they got some very interesting choices. They've got Braveheart on there, which it kind of defeats kind of the purpose of Braveheart. Because, you know, it's kind of the whole war is hell thing.
Right.
You know, the whole point of that movie is show, like Saving Private Ryan. The point of showing that movie was to show what it's like and what the horrors of war are. It's just very interesting to me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. When I went in, they had Basic Instinct. They had RoboCop. And they had The Passion of the Christ. And, you know, regardless, I mean, one of the big questions about The Passion of the Christ is, why is this film so violent? Well, of course, the answer is that that's what Mel Gibson intended. And by taking out the violence of the movie, we're talking about 90 minutes of no movie. We're talking like, I mean, how much of this movie can they even show for
Well,
Pete's
like
sake?
They had The Libertine. So what is that, 15 minutes?
No kidding. Yeah, to me, like, it completely defeats the point. It's one thing to censor your films. It's one thing to, you know, have fast forward through bad parts. Basic Instinct, I mean, that's a movie that I remember my father censoring for me the first time I ever saw it. Because he's like, you know, Barry, this movie has a really good plot. So the first time I saw Basic Instinct, I really wasn't completely aware that it was such a graphic film because I thought it was a really engaging mystery, to tell you the truth. But, you know, and now it's like, I think that actually – that helps the movie because otherwise it really is a really gratuitous sleaze fest, I think. But in the case of something like RoboCop or Braveheart, I think it really hurts the integrity of the movie.
Okay, so what happened? Let me just break down real quick what happened. So CleanFlix makes this service. They say we're legally in the right because every movie copy of this movie we sell or we send out to rent, they have like a Netflix-type service going. We send a copy of the movie as well as the edited copy. And they proceeded to sue the major studios, Fincher, as well as David Fincher and Spielberg and several other directors, for the right to do this. So who knows if the studios ever would have gone after them, but they pulled the trigger, and the judge came down and said, no, you guys can't do this. Because when you purchase the license, you purchased the right to watch the movie and to own the movie. You did not purchase the license to circumvent the encryption software and to edit the content of the movie. Mm. And there's been a lot of debate between some people who are pro-family who really see this as a good thing and then people who are like, you know, like you said with RoboCop and Braveheart, it really hurts the integrity of the movie. And one movie that really brought this home for me is there's a movie that just came out. It's a Christian film called The Second Chance. And it was directed by a guy named Steve Taylor, who was quite a revolutionary in the Christian music scene because he really wrote a lot of satire about the church and how the church needs to change and stuff. So he took the same approach, and there's some swearing in it. You know, you have a pastor who works in the ghetto, and he's talking to a gang member, and he's like, look, you mess with my people, I'm going to open up a can of the wrath of God on your ass, which I thought was great. But, you know, it was definitely sanitized down because it's meant for a family audience, for a Christian audience, but there was some showing of that harsh reality. This is the real world, and it's kind of like we're trying to insulate kids from what real life is.
Sure.
And funny aside, when I think of this, all I can think of is the episode of Friends where, like, they were watching Old Yeller, and Phoebe was like, oh, this is such a great movie, it's a happy ending. And they're like, what? She's like, yeah, he gets to keep the dog forever and everything, and there, it gets to the point where they shoot Old Yeller, and she, you know, and what's wrong? What did she do before? Oh, at the end, she just, like, turned the TV off and say, okay, that's the end. And it's kind of like it's kind of like doing that same thing to your kids, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't want to support the movie, don't support the movie.
Right. No, we can go so many directions with that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's obvious that we're both kind of against the whole concept of CleanFlix, but I wonder if
my main thing is I think there is a an audience for this. There's a market for this.
Yeah.
And the main part is just get the people's permission to do it. I mean, they're charging a premium for this thing. It's like $20 a month to have two movies out at a time.
That's right.
If they were to like increase the price of the movies to buy like a buck or two and give that to the studios, I'm sure that no one would have any problem, or they right. would have any legal problems with it. I still have my own personal problems with it, like I said. But, you know, who wants their kids to watch, you know, The Libertine, period?
Right.
Why do you need to watch that movie if you object to the content? Otherwise, you're saying, hey, make more of these movies. I'll just watch the sanitized version, as opposed to watching supporting movies like The Rookie, which, while it wasn't, you know, Oscar-winning or anything, for a G-rated movie geared towards adults, it was surprisingly good. And if more people got behind that, then you'd have more movies that, you know, would actually be more to what you want to watch and what you want to subject your family to.
Definitely. And there are films, I think, of like Rain Man or The Joy Luck Club, which I thought the R-rated slapped on those movies was completely unnecessary and not merited. And, you know, films like Terms of Endearment, which are loaded with F-bombs, but, you know, PG-rated, because this is before PG-13 came around. So this whole issue, I mean, it takes on the rating system itself, and it takes on, you know, the matter of why doesn't Hollywood do enough family movies, and should we simply just wait for these films, or should we try to sanitize these films? So it's like Clean Flicks, in a sense, is almost like an antidote for that. It's like, on one hand, you know, yes, they had the permission to do this, but then the question of is this completely and utterly necessary? And like yourself, I just don't think it ever was to begin with.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, my parents took me to movies like War Games, which, you know, for a PG movie at that time, it had a good bit of swearing in it. And afterwards, we're like, you know, my parents said, hey, that was a great movie. Too bad there was so much swearing in it. And, oh, look, Dave just learned a life lesson there.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like parents don't want to take the time to parent anymore. They want to be their kids' friends. I want to watch Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. They don't look as to why it's rated R. It's a very mature content movie.
Sure.
And I'm not thinking like mature as an adult, you know, pornographic way or anything. I'm thinking it's very high-level concept.
It's an adult concept. Yeah.
So, you know, why do you want to be the kid's friend as opposed to their parent? You know, that's kind of the question that comes back to.
Yeah, it really does come down to the ethical issue, too. Just, you know, how much, yeah. I had a kid I remember growing up with in grade school. He would come to school every day and tell me about all these R-rated movies he'd seen. He was, you know, this was fourth grade, so he was about eight or nine years old. His name was Shane. Great friend. Really great friend. But, you know, he would come to school, hey, have you seen Lethal Weapon yet? Have you seen Stakeout yet? Have you seen The Serpent and the Rainbow yet? I'm like, I'm like, you know what? I have not seen that. But, you know, I've seen, I saw The Chipmunk Adventure, which was great. So
The Rescuers are, you know, yeah. Oliver and Company.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's like, on one hand, I've always been kind of, I like that something like Clean Flicks can even exist in American society, because on one hand, it's blatant censorship, and yet I think it's interesting that something like that could even survive, and that an alternative like that does exist, because I think perhaps, as much as I hate to admit it, there can be some good to something like that, and yet the fact that it didn't survive, I think, kind of, in my opinion, shows how futile the idea was to begin with.
Their site's still up and running.
Their site's still
They're
up
still
and running.
Going, apparently.
So I can like get it off online now, like a Netflix kind of deal.
Yeah, there was one here in Colorado Springs, but they closed down who knows how long ago. And they run off an online subscription now. And I mean, my problem, yes, I have definitely have a problem with the censorship, but the main thing is they didn't talk to anybody. They just said, hey, we're going to do this, and we're going to sue you for the right to do it, because we think we should be able to.
Yeah, and that's
without having
that's
to pay
tacky.
You anything extra. That's where it's like, you know what? You didn't do anything to make the movie, so you don't get to make that decision. That's
right.
Where my problem comes in. I mean, if you ask any artist, any filmmaker, hey, can we make a version of your movie that was like a hard R war movie, like make it G-rated? They're going to say, you know, we don't want you to, but the studios are going to be out to make money, so they'll find a way to make it work.
Absolutely. Well, it's like arguably the greatest anti-drug film movie ever made is Darren Aronofsky's Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
Not a film for family members, not a film for almost anyone, but in diluting the powerful effect of that movie, I think you completely hurt the anti-drug message. Because if you take out all the harsh scenes of withdrawal and all the horrific things that happen to these characters, you've got a pretty groovy music video.
Now, have you seen the R-rated cut?
I have.
So did they cut more than just like the sex scene with Marlon Wayans or the scene with Jennifer Connelly?
That was generally it.
That was generally it?
That was generally all that I noticed.
Okay, so I mean, in that case, that when I saw the movie, I was like, well, they could have cut that out. You know, and there's points where you can make those cuts, and you just don't want to for whatever reason.
It's interesting, yeah, because you know, this is a movie that's obviously so horrifically intense in its depiction of a downward spiral of drug addiction, and yet the reason it was unrated or NC-17 initially is because of these sex scenes, which the one with Jennifer Connelly is obviously, in a sense, necessary because it's what's happening to her character. The other one with Marlon Wayans, I didn't think it was needed.
Well, what about the scene where she's standing in front of the mirror?
That's true. I thought that scene, it was such a character scene.
It was.
You know, the nudity was distracting because, as Shea would know it, it's Jennifer Connelly. But certainly, it's a tough issue. I mean, like, how do they even decide, you know, the integrity of these films in the first place with these ratings? I remember reading an interview with Wes Craven talking about his film, The People Under the Stairs, and it's like you almost get the sense that the MPAA actually got it, just like they got it with Requiem. They picked on Requiem for the sexual content and not for any other thing, because to cut it out, cut these scenes would dilute it. In the case of People Under the Stairs, there's a scene because they really enjoyed the urban message of his film. He had this really anti-establishment story about how these evil people are exploiting the poor. And there's a scene in the movie where this horrific bad guy is essentially performing an act of cannibalism. And the MPAA decided, out of all the violent scenes in this movie that Wes Craven had did, they wanted to cut this one quick take of this character biting into a liver. You know, it's a moment of cannibalism. They said, cut that out, but keep everything else in this entire movie. And this is an extremely violent movie. But they liked what he had to say. They liked his overall point. And I guess they liked the theory behind his film. So they decided, you know, this is just the one thing that's gratuitous. And most people would say that Requiem for a Dream is a pretty, you know, gratuitously intense and horrific film. And yet the MPAA, again, you know, they decided to keep the nudity, and yet, they would decide to excise the nudity but keep the scenes that were potent to the plot.
And that was just for the DVD release, though.
Right.
I was shocked that Artisan actually released that unrated. I went up and saw it up in Denver.
What happened if everything was clean? Do you think all the people in the world will get mad because there's no violence, no nudity? Would it be hard for the people to watch movies?
That's actually a pretty legitimate question.
That's an interesting question.
Would the world be so bad without the nudity, without the violence?
Well, then we'd be living in Pleasantville or the Demolition Man version of the future.
Or Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, Clockwork Orange.
But that is
You know, Hollywood always says that they're trying to make more movies for family audiences. But, you know, you mentioned that movie, The Second Chance. I mean, that's an excellent point. I mean, ooh, there's a moment of profanity in that movie. Because, you know, there's no profanity in modern American society. And you know your kids, especially the ones who go to public school or, God forbid, a Christian school, would never, ever hear someone say the word ass in public. It's unthought of. So
hell is bad enough.
Oh, yeah, the Bible is full of that horrible word. I mean, we should really start censoring the Bible. I mean, for this, it comes down to, you know, an ethical question and, you know, a moral question of what should and shouldn't be seen. And what, you know, and everything should be taken within context, but there are things, obviously, little kids should never...
Like an edited version of Pulp Fiction. Or no, they didn't do Pulp Fiction, they did the Kill Bill movies. Those
Kill
the
Bill.
Films.
That's ridiculous.
So why... There's no point to that movie outside of the violence. I mean, there really isn't. It's a movie about revenge.
It's part of the story.
What about saying sugar and fudge?
So are you in favor of this, Shay, this idea of a clean world with clean movies? Because, see, that's the problem with the argument. It's like, what is and isn't allowed? I mean, you know.
Where do you draw the line?
Exactly, because, I mean, you know, this movie, The Passion of the Christ, this is the Bible. We're talking about a book that American society was founded on. And it's an R-rated movie for excellent reason. And yet, when the movie was out, there were a lot of parents taking their kids to see this movie because they thought it was an absolute necessity that they witness, you know, what Christ went through. Okay, and yet it is a horrifically violent movie. Even people who love the movie, like myself, The Passion of the Christ is a horrifically violent movie, and I would say no kid should see that film.
I own it, and we haven't watched it on DVD. We watched it once in the theater. I bought it because I thought it was such an important film, but we haven't watched it.
Sure.
You don't sit down on a Sunday afternoon, let's watch The Passion of the Christ, honey. You know, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, either Armageddon or Passion of the Christ, which one should we watch? Yeah. Which one's fun? It is, and this is the ethical argument, too. Like, because I'm like yourself, I think that is the parent's job. I don't think that children should be subjected to the horrors of the world initially, you know, while they're still children. I don't think, you know, I don't think a child should be sat down, made to watch something like RoboCop and go, this is how horrible the world is. You need to see this because you're going to see it all anyway. I mean, I think that kind of defeats the purpose of being a child to begin with.
We need great role modelship like Leave It to Beaver and Andy Griffin shows.
Wow, man. We got the far right with this today, Chick.
Yes. I mean, I think there is something to be said for having a TV show that the whole family can watch. Here's the downside. It's not going to be groundbreaking.
Sure.
And it's going to have to take someone who would actually have the passion to really want to do something like this, but still have solid writing.
So, yeah, because I just thought of the one years when I'm like, no, you know, that had some sexual innuendo in there, too.
But, yeah, so it's, you know, I think we may have gotten past that point where something like that could be a viable success.
Yeah.
And in a way, it is kind of sad because it is kind of like mourning the loss of innocence.
Right.
Which, you know, there's definitely – innocence is a wonderful thing. You know, it's not something to get rid of the first chance you get.
Right. Something to hold on to if you can, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Exactly. So one of the interesting things about this is that it's very hard to find someone who's on the other side of the story from us.
Sure.
So we'll probably just let this go from now. If you want to bring it up, go to our forums, talk about it. We'll talk with you about it and whatever. And, you know,
absolutely.
I'd love to have an actual dialogue. Like, we're all about not shouting down each other. We just want to talk about it. You know,
right.
It's an interesting idea.
It's a good topic to discuss and debate.
So moving right along, this next point is venturing into spoiler territory. Barry, Shay, and I all got to go see Lady in the Water last night. We got to get into a sneak preview. And we're going to be discussing it in depth. Both as a movie, we're going to be going full on into spoiler territory. So if you're wanting not to be spoiled for this movie, you'd probably want to just go ahead and skip to the end of the episode.
Probably just listen to the rest of this later.
Yeah. And we're also going to compare it to his other films. So we'll go on from there. What do you think about the movie?
I think it's one of his most problematic films. On one hand, I admire that the guy, with each and every film, has never taken a safe route out. I mean, after Sixth Sense, I mean, he really could have done a generic horror movie remake. He could have done essentially anything. He could have done an action movie, and everybody would have been very pleased. But after his big breakthrough success of The Sixth Sense, he did Unbreakable, which is really one of the strangest films I think ever been greenlit from a Hollywood studio, and certainly the last thing people expect, or the last thing they think of when they hear the coin, you know, the term coined comic book movie. And then, you know, from there he did Signs, which on one hand is very commercial. It's Mel Gibson, it's an alien invasion movie, and yet it's got all these very profound theological points, and it's actually a very, very heart-filled film and more character than special effects driven. You know, that's a real rarity for a summer movie. And then The Village, which is, I think, a flawed film, but I think it has a lot of admirable qualities to it. And then finally to Lady in the Water, which takes some really, really real chances. He took some big chances as a writer, I think, more than anything.
Get it? The writer?
Yes,
sorry.
The writer. But yeah, but no, I want you to start talking about what you didn't like about the film, because we're both kind of on the same page.
Well, going back to The Village, I think The Village is Shyamalan's film saying, you know what, screw the critics. Because for the most part, they loved him for Sixth Sense. They loved him for Unbreakable. The script got out for The Village. Everyone knew what the story was before the movie even came out. They knew what the twist was. They knew what was going on. I think had I not been so spoiled watching before I'd seen that movie, I still would have had a problem with them showing you the suit for the monsters halfway into the movie and then pretending that they didn't show you the suit. But it wouldn't have pissed me off quite to the same level, I don't think.
Sure.
So I purposely tried to stay as much out of spoiler territory for this movie. Just, you know, what people think, thumbs up, thumbs down. You know, give me a general synopsis. And I think that helped a lot. I really thought this was by far his funniest movie.
Certainly.
I mean, that's a given. I mean, granted, he's not known for slapstick exactly. But this was a very funny movie, I thought. I thought it was definitely had the most heart of any movie that he's made yet, too.
Definitely.
There's a lot of love in that movie, you know, because it's taken from the point of view of a fairy tale. If you can roll with everything that entails, which by definition a fairy tale, you're making it up as you go along. If you can roll with that, you'll enjoy the movie for the most part.
Definitely.
I didn't have many problems with the effects or anything. I really enjoyed it all in all. The problem I had was with Shyamalan himself. And if he ever hears this, he'll hate us or whatever, but oh well. Like that's gonna happen.
This is a legitimate complaint, though. I think
you have many directors who do cameos. Peter Jackson did it in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Hitchcock was notorious for having like little 1 second cameos. That's like part of the fun. Is where's Hitchcock in the movie?
Tarantino in Pulp Fiction.
Yes, and you had Shyamalan do that too. And I mean, Shyamalan's very much pushed himself as like the next Hitchcock. after The Sixth Sense, he's pretty much created his own hype engine. And he's had unprecedented ability to do whatever he wants. He has creative control. He has final cut control. He has no edits to the screenplay into his contract. He's in control of the marketing and everything, which is a problem because the film couldn't have been marketed worse. Like everything you see in the trailer, that's like all the scary plus maybe 5 minutes, I thought. And he cast himself in a role that was the third most speaking part in the film,
yeah,
and probably the most important character in the film to me. And it was of a writer who's going to be, you know, in have this muse inspire him, and he writes this film, this book that will be read by this child who will become the president of the United States and change the world, and it's Shyamalan. And I'm just like, could you get a little bit more of a messiah complex, please?
It was a little much. It was, and like I was telling you after the movie, there's the scene where he's particularly talking to Bryce Dallas Howard's character, who is the one who has the Narf, yeah, who has the vision of him as what's going to happen to him in the future. The dialogue between the two of them, it really sounds like Shyamalan talking to her about this film we're watching, giving himself almost like a self-criticism, him saying like, will the world be able to accept what I've done, what I've written? And it's just, it's just too much. It really is. And considering all the great actors he has in this movie in supporting roles like Bob Balaban and Jeffrey Wright, it's like, why couldn't he have found just another really sharp character actor to play this role? It really was not necessary for him to play this part.
Yeah, if he'd gotten another actor to play that part, we wouldn't be talking about this issue right now,
right?
I don't think.
Because it's a good role and it's a good element of the movie.
And he's not a bad actor in the film.
No,
really
he's not.
I mean, he did a decent job.
He's a very understated actor.
And he put his words in his own mouth, and it was those words. It was... I mean, I told you before, I'd heard that it was very self-indulgent. And I don't know if it gets much more self-indulgent than that scene.
Right.
Like, I don't even care about him killing off the critic. I mean, that was a good joke.
Sure.
I thought that was great. But it seemed just to be a little bit more of a twist of the blade, just get a little bit more annoying. See, I'm all-powerful. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Whereas if he had someone else play the character, that's all that I'm saying, the movie would have played completely differently. I mean, I had people at work today asking me over and over what I thought of it because I told everyone I was going to see it. And I just get this shrug, and I'm like, I loved it and I hated it. And I'm like, go see the movie. It's a very interesting movie. It's a good movie. But that one scene, if you can get past it, it's all good. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why I wanted Shay here, we're like uber movie geeks, all right? We're buffs beyond words. I mean, Barry's going to be teaching at CU Colorado Springs a film course. But, you know, I wanted to get someone who, you know, who's more, may not be as familiar with Shyamalan's work or, you know, is a more casual moviegoer. I want to know what, you know, what you have to think. So what do you think about it?
Well, the thing I didn't like about it is it's like horror flicks. There are so many things given away, so many pointers in that movie. You know who's going to die, who's going to like get away, bring everybody into one big room or something like that. But the only thing is I don't like about movie is when it is one thing, you know what's going to happen when they're at the door. It goes into slow motion. Why don't they just let the thing happen instead of thing in slow motion?
Well, when the dog goes flying through the door, crashing through the
door.
That's
an excellent point. I thought that too.
That was the most stupidest thing I ever seen. And you know what's going to happen throughout the whole movie. It's like a story, like never ending story or so on. But the thing I liked about, the thing that was really confusing to me is in the beginning of the story when it tells the story with the stick figure.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny in a way.
No, well, you know, I want to go back to your point, though, because I completely agree with you that I found that distracting, too, the use of slow motion in that one scene, because the village was overloaded with those moments where he uses a lot of slow motion in his action sequences, and I thought it hurt the movie. There's slow motion, and then there's the way he does it, which are so slow. It's one thing John Woo does to slow down the action to see how cool everything is, but when you're slowing down a scene that really doesn't need to be slowed down, I thought it kind of hurt the intensity of what we're watching. And that scene in particular where you slow down the dog action, I thought it kind of took away the bite of the shock.
And you had the same thing where as a good use of the slow motion was at the end of the movie when the Tuturics or whatever they were called, when the monkeys came down and grabbed the wolf. He slowed it down so you could see what the heck was going on.
Right, and that was good. Yeah,
which was a good use of it. You're going to hear me like, okay, that was my huge problem with Shyamalan. I loved the movie overall, but part of that's because like Shay and I were talking beforehand about movies we were growing up with, and Neverending Story and Last Starfighter came up, And I saw quite a few moments of Neverending Story at the end. You had Bastion having to go up to the window and yell the name for the princess, or her entire universe is going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
He's like, what am I doing? This is a story. There's no way this is real. But he makes that leap of faith to say, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway because, you know, I feel like I need to do this. And I liked the fact that they actually had many of the characters have to make that decision. Instead of just saying, okay, let's go ahead, you know. It seemed a bit more grounded in reality. How's a normal person going to react when they're faced with this thing? Yes, there's this mythical creature, and you're a guardian, or you're a translator or something. I do crossword puzzles. What are you talking about?
Right.
And I thought it was a very good... I thought it was cool that they had that step in there. I thought it was very important to the believability of the story.
So you think the film was an effective modern-day fairy tale? Because that's one thing... I don't know if I had a problem with it, but I thought at times the writing was a little awkward simply because... On one hand, you've got a very gritty modern-day story, and particularly the story behind Paul Giamatti's character, which is very tragic and very heartfelt, and his performance really hits a lot of notes that are very hard for a movie like this.
I thought one thing that was great about his performance, sorry to interrupt,
also, go ahead.
Was that at the beginning, you just think he's some guy who's just a super and doesn't have any ambition in life, and you find out how he came to that point and how tragic it really is. It really brings everything you saw earlier into a different light. Which is great. Giamatti, he rules. That's all there is.
He gives an excellent performance. No, but at the same time, I had a hard time with that because on one hand, the movie is very gritty in its realism. On the other hand, they're talking about, you know, about Narves, and you have the scene where we talked about where she has like this little cubby hole at the bottom of the swimming pool, and at times I thought that the fantasy and the reality were banging heads with each other at times.
Yeah, and I have to say the first showing.net guys, they were doing opening night stuff. I think it's going to be tomorrow night since this is Thursday, where they're going to have how long can you hold your breath contest, and that's all I could think of because Alex told me they were going to do that, and I'm like, that's going to be so great when that comes to that point of the movie. It's just going to be funny. So Shay's got something to add too.
Talk about Dave's holding his the breath part. There must be so many takes because there's no way going through a pool, opening up a drain, and going down to I'm not gonna say anything, but
go ahead.
We give this away now, yeah.
Or just holding, like going down the pool, going down this thing, and going all the way down to the Narf's bedroom or so on. That I don't know if. If there was a 2 or 3 minutes, because that's
kind of went a long time, you think? Yeah. No, could hold. Not even David Blaine could hold his breath for that long.
Yeah, but I probably could because I'm from Hawaii. So.
That's right.
It's the Hawaiian pride.
That's right.
I totally was like, okay, yeah, he's holding his breath that long. I actually didn't notice any water at some point, so I almost wondered if they just had air and threw a filter on it and just had him pretend.
Right, like they did for Hunt for Red October. That's a good point,
too.
But
what you hit a point where, that's why I said earlier, if you can roll with the fact that this is a fairy tale and it's not going to be realistic, you're either going to accept it or you're not.
It's true, and it really is life or death for this movie. I'd say, like, if you're not in tune with the fairy tale motif, this movie's going to be really hard to sit through for a lot of people.
Because
it is so blatantly, utterly ridiculous at times.
Yeah.
There's some scenes that I didn't like because I saw some scenes where I just saw the Sixth Sense a little bit. Then I saw Signs. I think this movie is kind of like Signs in a way, because when he goes out to the pool area, relate to the alien in Signs.
Oh, like with the crop
the
circles?
Yes. No, yeah.
Oh, the water thing. You're right. You're right. Yeah, the water motif. And it's been the same with Unbreakable, water motif.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
That's a good point.
I mean, I think his body of work overall is fascinating.
It is.
Unbreakable is by far my favorite movie that he's done, just because I'm such a superhero geek.
Sure.
And the fact that he said it like as grounded as he could in real life.
Yeah.
That just, you know, there were no capes, there was no spandex, there was no, you know, tight black leather. But, you know, you had... It was very grounded in a reality. You know, you had some guy who's just trying to get along, and you have this other guy who's trying to find out what his purpose in life is, and it turns out to be this great superhero movie. I don't know if you remember hearing the rumors after that came out. There was talk that he might make it a trilogy of movies.
Right. Yeah.
The geeks went crazy. Like everyone's like, that would freaking rule.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. But you know that one of the interesting things is that almost all of his movies are polarizing.
Sure.
Like, my dad really didn't like Unbreakable at all. And you really rarely find people who are like, yeah, the movie was okay. It's either they really liked it or they really didn't like it.
Sure.
Like, a lot of people will acknowledge The Sixth Sense was a great movie because not because it was even all that original. It was a return to filmmaking that hadn't been done for so many years.
Yeah.
Really doing a good suspense, a good mystery that wasn't like an erotic thriller or something.
Right.
And I thought that he... People call him a one-trick pony, but I don't really see that.
No.
People like, Signs didn't have a twist ending. And, you know, while he does have a very distinct style, he is very much into the suspense and stuff, Hitchcock did the same thing, and he was lauded for doing the same exact thing. Now, I'm not about to put Shyamalan on the same level as Hitchcock, but there's nothing wrong with doing something and doing it well and knowing what you want to do. You know, so his body of work overall is very interesting, and I thought this was actually a departure from what he'd done because it was a lot lighter of a film overall.
Sure, sure. The Hitchcock comparison is very apt because just to look at Hitchcock's body of work, here's a guy who, you know, he did, let's see if I can get this right, he did North by Northwest, Psycho, and The Birds, and Marnie all back to back. And you know, and wow. We've been talking about some of the greatest American movies ever. Marnie is considered a flop. It was a box office flop, granted, but the critics considered it a flop when it first came out because it's a very strange film. It's a very different film. And because it just came off of The Birds, which is really one of the greatest, to this day, one of the greatest special effects horror films ever made. And then he does this very strange and abstract film with Sean Connery and Tippi Hedren. And the problem with that film is a lot of the choices he made for that film weren't completely understood by people then. And of course now we're like, oh, that's brilliant that the sets for Marnie were all blatantly phony, therefore illuminating what the character was going through, her view of reality. And there were all these things that people look at now and say, well, Marnie is like an undiscovered masterpiece. And I think inevitably that will happen with Shyamalan, because The Sixth Sense, we were just watching it this morning, Shay and I, and it's a tight movie. It's to this day. I mean, it's a near perfect film. I think it's a great example of the genre. And the thing about Unbreakable does two things. I mean, first of all, I think better than Lady in the Water, it does balance the fantastic with the normal.
Most definitely.
Definitely. And the thing about Unbreakable, it takes such chances. I mean, even from the opening scroll, it's like, where in the world is this movie going? And the character development. I mean, it's a very rich film. Regardless if you didn't care for the movie or not, it's undeniable that stylistically, Shyamalan had really grown as a filmmaker. And he takes some choices that are like the rest of his work, continually interesting.
The thing I like about Sixth Sense is the kid who played the role was awesome.
Yeah.
With Bruce Willis. And the thing I don't like about it is when nobody paid attention to the kid except Bruce Willis. And that's really, it touched me through the whole movie. And then when Bruce Willis find out, you know, so-and-so, he did his part, helped out, and he became an angel.
Wow. We got shot up by a cracked out new kid.
That pretty much sums up the movie for me.
But I think that's a very interesting point, is he knows who to cast.
Sure.
You know, casting Bryce Dallas Howard, she was great in The Village.
She was the best thing about The Village, I thought, yeah.
So the way that I see The Lady in the Water is at some point it's going to be a Shyamalan entry drug for kids. They're going to be like, that was a really cool movie. Like, even as like early teenagers, you know, someone might see that movie, okay, what else did this guy make? And sure. They're going to see... I think that he could almost be like an entry drug into for movie geeks.
I like that term, entry drug. Yeah, because there are certain movies that these directors do, and you look back, and you know, like I would never see a Nick Castle movie because of Mr. Wrong, but because this is the guy. Like if I saw, like to go where I'm going with this, The Last Starfighter, I wanted to see what else he had done, and that's how I discovered The Boy Who Could Fly, which is one of my all-time favorite '80s movies. And yeah, certainly this is a very interesting entry movie for.
We had Star Wars. That introduced me to American Graffiti.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and it really expanded my horizons. Wow, this guy does good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Spielberg worked on Indiana Jones. What did he work on? And you kind of get this whole 12 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing going on.
Yeah.
And it opens you up to a whole new world. So, I mean, he's getting trashed for this movie. And while I said, you know, I stand by my flaws with the film and it really detracts from the film, I thought it was a good movie overall.
Absolutely. You know, and I mean, as of the time of this recording, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean 2 is the number one movie in America.
But it had a 54% drop-off over 1 week.
Which says a lot. But you know what? Like, I would rather continue to see a filmmaker like this take big freaking risks with what is expected of him and not always pull it off, but continue to do things that are really interesting and make a movie that, while flawed, is very good. rather than something like Pirates, which is exactly as you expect. It's pretty much like a happy meal for the masses that I think overall people are going to forget over time.
I think Shyamalan's days as a golden boy are probably over.
Sure.
I could most definitely see him settling into like a Woody Allen type role, making movies that will make money, but are just so interesting. And I mean, granted, I mean, you can make a case that Woody Allen's done the same thing for the past 30 years.
Sure.
Anyway, I'm not going to say, you know, one way or another, but you know, it's some, but he also takes some chances and he's a very unique filmmaker. And I think it's important to have that. Don't have, you know, just who's the hot flavor of the week who's going to do the big action movie that's going to make us $300 million. And I could see him being a very important part of the film community. Maybe not being, you know, as important as he was after Sixth Sense and even after Unbreakable and even after Signs. I mean, it wasn't until The Village that his stock started waning.
Right.
But he's going to be around for a long time, and I'm looking forward to the next movie he makes. I will go see. There's no question about it.
Sure.
And I wasn't sure if I was going to see this one after The Village, but I was like, you know, we're going to take a chance.
And it was free.
It was free, but, you know, he paid it off for me. I thought it was, you know, it was worth me taking that chance, and I'll take the chance again.
Absolutely. No, you know, the Woody Allen comparison is really apt because Allen, one of my favorite film directors, he's made films that are continually interesting and well-written and very good, but not quite up to his masterpieces over the years. And then, you know, it's a complete roller coaster. He's done films like Mighty Aphrodite, and then he's made films that weren't even anywhere near that good. And then all of a sudden he does this film now, Match Point, that came out, and all of a sudden he's a major filmmaker again. Everybody's paying attention, and his new movie Scoop coming out with Hugh Jackman and Scarlett Johansson. Everybody's looking forward to that because is Woody Allen continuing on this streak? I predict... If I'm a betting man, I predict that because I think, honestly, Lady in the Water is going to flop. I think that's kind of a hard truth. I think it's going to flop. I think after that, it'll be a few years before we hear from him again, and he'll do something, I think, more closer to the Sixth Sense, and it'll be like a so-called return to form. And once he returns to form, he'll continue to do things more like this that are more closer to his heart and more challenging. And people will be like, well, because he's been through this phase before, we can accept it now the second time.
So. Even though this is all part of his form, I think, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's what the popular thought of his return to form is.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, The Sixth Sense, I mean, on one hand, it's a wonderful film, wonderfully written. But it's arguably his most conventional film. It is a supernatural thriller. It's a ghost story. It's a character drama. And that's pretty much as far as you can go as, like, for the descriptive. But
yeah,
unlike something like The Village, where it's like you're talking a complete a social satire. You know, you're talking about a horror movie,
conspiracy.
A conspiracy. It's a horror movie, and yet it's also this really, really sweet and I found very affecting love story too. There's a lot going on in The Village, and I think you know a lot of people weren't realizing that because they were so ticked off that it wasn't a little horror movie, but it was actually something more akin to what Rod Serling had done on Twilight Zone.
And that's one of the big things. He does full-length, feature-length Twilight Zone episodes.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I was going to go with that. So.
And you're right. Lady in the Water is exactly like that. Lady in the Water is definitely modern-day
Twilight
Zone.
I've been
making
a point of telling people that this is not a horror movie. I mean, if you go into this thing thinking you're going to see a horror movie or like this really taut suspense thriller, you're going to walk out so torqued off at this movie.
But I found it scary. I thought it was a scary movie, scarier than The Village.
Oh, yeah. But what I loved was you have these groups. You have, what was it, you had the Guardian.
The Guilds.
The Guild and all that. And they explain who these people are. And immediately you think of certain tenants that you've seen in the building. And they were definitely the red herrings. Because he sent you right to those people. And then they're like, oh, wait, no, it's these people who are actually these. You know, instead of being the Guardian, Paul Giamatti is instead of being the healer.
Right.
Which you didn't see initially. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, and he did kind of take some cheap ways out because instead of seeing the butterflies, you know, the reason that he thought the old lady was the healer was the butterflies, I had to see it again, but I don't know that he had butterflies following him around.
Yeah, I didn't quite get that either.
But if he did, it's going to be one of those movies that you see it the second time around. Oh, yeah, he had butterflies. I'm an idiot.
It's interesting because on one hand, it was a very cleverly constructed screenplay considering what he was doing, which is extremely ambitious and almost...
It's difficult to say something, hey, I'm going to do something I'm making up on the fly, but I'm making it into a movie.
Yeah, this is a children's story I've been telling for years, and I'm going to do it a modern day, and it's you know, it's going to have all these different crazy elements of it, and most of it's going to have these really weird made-up words. And yet, I don't know where I was going with that. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, watching Lady in the Water with Dave, Barry, his wife, Julia, and I, if you watch that And if you see Sixth Sense, you'll see some of the characters in that movie play in that, because the guy who writes out of the cookbook plays the doctor in Sixth Sense. The sister plays some other married woman. And you got some other role characters.
Yeah, there's definitely members of Shyamalan's stock company in Lady in the Water. I would
what were your high points?
I actually wanted to finish my
kind of, yeah.
I wanted to finish my tangent, but I think moreover, I wanted to say that I liked Giamatti, but with Bryce Dallas Howard, I felt that she was more cast for the very otherworldly beauty she brought for the part. But otherwise, she wasn't as well used. I thought the role was similar to like Daryl Hannah in Splash. It was very a reactionary kind of character. It wasn't really a character that I could really connect with emotionally, unlike The Village, where all eyes were on her for the entire film. And I wanted to finish my tangent by saying that on one hand, I thought Shyamalan's screenplay was very clever, but on the other hand, I thought it was too knowingly clever. Like a lot of the stuff that the critic was saying at times, you know, and it spills into Shyamalan's performance. I thought like the pretension just kind of got a little out of control.
Which is why I'm like, this is going to be a perfect movie for younger viewers to see, because they're not going to see all that stuff.
You know, we've
seen it all, the drama that Shyamalan's brought into this movie, you know, his well-publicized exodus from Disney.
Right.
And the book that came out about him.
Yeah, a lot of drama.
He consistently, apparently, I haven't read the book, but from what I've heard, he consistently compares himself to like Bob Dylan and Michael Jordan.
Oh.
And, you know, you have if you don't have this baggage for this movie, if I didn't have all that baggage for this thing, I probably would have loved the movie even more.
Yeah.
So, but then again, you know, Shyamalan is his own hype machine. So he's just as much to blame for that as anyone who's picked up on it.
That's interesting. Yeah, and like Hitchcock, I think over time, when we look at the film just as individual films, I think we'll be able to appreciate them more rather than the event of the moments that they are. You know, something like The Village, which was, you know, hyped as like one of the, you know, the big next events in horror movies. I mean, I think it was even on the cover of Fangoria, The Village, you know. And it's not that kind of movie, but taken as a film unto itself, I think it's very good, flaws and all.
And what I'm worried about with Shyamalan, and this is a very legitimate concern, I think, I'm worried at some point he's going to have a Mr. Arkadin experience like Orson Welles had, where he had a movie taken away from him.
Yeah.
And he never made another movie after that.
That's a good point. There was
a re-edit. The Criterion Collection came out with a 3-disc set. One of them has what is believed to be the closest thing to his original edit. And he found out about it like in the late 80s, and he still wouldn't watch it because it was such a painful experience.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be a waste for him to get driven away by the film industry like that. And I could see it happening with the next movie. You know, if he doesn't take some time to regroup or whatever, make whatever movie you want, you know, just think about it a little bit more. I mean, it's a very simple thing, you know. It very well could have been, you know what, I don't trust anyone else to do this role, I need to do this role. Or I need to do this to respond to my critics or whatever.
Yeah.
He needs to have, as long as he has some good advisors who don't just say yes all the time, I think he's going to be amazing.
Certainly. And there's nothing wrong with playing the Hollywood game. Make one movie that, you know, like The Sixth Sense. I mean, he wrote it because he said he wanted to write just a killer screenplay to get back in the game after Wide Awake was so badly botched and released by Miramax. So certainly, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that, with him taking an approach like that to simply regroup, as it were.
Dave, I'm going to be honest with the viewers. From 1 to 10, my honest thing is going to be a 7. From 1 to 5 is actually a 2.
But between 1 to 3, what would it be?
I'll give it a 7. Because there is a fair tale, there is love and comedy about the whole movie.
So it didn't completely knock it out of the park, but it was a pretty solid movie. Like, you didn't regret watching it.
No. Well, I'm a baseball fan. I will give that a double. I won't give an RBI, a home run, grand slam. I'll give that a base single or a double.
Nice, nice.
Fair enough. See, we really don't have any ratings here, so hey, whatever you want to do works, you know. I refuse to give it any kind of rating because I'm still kind of processing it even now, you know, a good 24 hours after seeing it. But I enjoyed it. I don't know that I'll buy it or anything or even that I'll see it again, but, you know, in the theater. But I'll probably rent it at some point at least just to revisit it.
It'll come to DVD.
Whether it's a success or not, whether it finds a success in a second audience, I think it's going to. A lot more people are going to give it a chance on DVD, which is what's great about the DVD format.
Right. You know, this has been a weird summer though, because you know we saw a movie earlier this summer called The Breakup, a romantic comedy that wasn't funny or romantic.
You're on the jam in Maui, and I listened to you on there from the tape recording, and they asked you 1 to 10, what was your rating?
I give it a 1.
And that was being generous?
I thought it was a terrible film. Not sure where we're going with that. But anyway, I was saying the breakup, which I thought was a disaster of a movie, but it made a ton of money. And here's a film that, to state the obvious point, is really going to polarize a lot of people. It might have a shot. You never know. Maybe I shouldn't write it off like I've been.
Well, no, I mean, if it finds an extra life, I could see it being like a Firefly type thing, where it finds its audience after it comes out into a home release.
Sure.
And, which I think is kind of sad. I mean, the studio gets their money one way or another. They don't care.
Yeah.
But, I've been encouraging people to take a shot at it, even though I had my flaw with it, and I don't tell them what the character is that Shyamalan plays, how self-aggrandizing and how,
Yeah.
It is, but I say, give it a shot. This is what you have to do. You have to go into this thinking it's a kid's movie. Don't worry about logic. But just sit back and enjoy it, and I think you'll enjoy it. And I think you're right. The first week it's going to be good. I'll have a good box office take, but word of mouth is going to be like, that was a stupid movie because it's not what they were expecting.
Yeah. To go back briefly to Lady in the Water, because I really liked a thing that you brought up, was how audiences not only rediscover the movies, but they sometimes rediscover the worlds that the movies present. Like Firefly is an excellent example. I know a lot of people who are completely versed in this world that Joss Whedon created, unlike a movie like The Chronicles of Riddick, which has its whole website and its whole world and its whole rules and crazy names of these crazy characters. Nobody cares. No one bothered to revisit the world of Riddick. I don't even think after Dark Fury. But a movie like this, I can almost imagine it, like how people are very fond of the worlds, like presented in like a Labyrinth or the Dark Crystal. I could see people like creating websites about the laws and the rules and the crazy names that Shyamalan asked us to take. And I think, although it was hard for me at first, maybe over time, I'll say Narf and not think of Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So, all right, I think we're going to wrap this one up. We've gone more than long enough. We had a good time.
Speaking of self-indulgence.
I want to shout out to the team, the professional golfer. I know you're going to do it. Follow your dreams and your goals.
Shay, thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming, Shay.
Yes, Shay from Maui.
All the way from Maui.
It's always good to have a special guest on.
We got two local boys in the studio.
Yes. By all means, send us your feedback. You can catch all of us at podcast@screengeeks.com, or you can email either Barry or I, Barry@screengeeks.com, Dave@screengeeks.com. Hit the website, hit our forums, register, say, hey, you guys suck or whatever, and we'll, be really nice to you and stuff. So until next time.
Very nice.
Yeah, until next time, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Shay.
Catch you next time.